You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, conductors, and creative minds behind the productions in the 2007-2008 season. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Soprano Dina Kuznetsova and mezzo-soprano Nino Surguladze are backstage at Lyric.
The music is so beautiful, though you don't have to even to act because it acts for you.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of one of the world's great opera companies. I'm Roger Pines of Lyric Opera of Chicago. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Russian-American soprano Dina Kuznetsova and Georgian mezzo-soprano Nino Surguladze, who are appearing in Lyric's production of Tchaikovsky's wonderfully romantic Eugene Onegin. Dina, who is singing the role of Tatiana, is an alumna of Lyric's Ryan Opera Center. She starred at Lyric most recently in Romeo and Juliet. Earlier this season, she made her debut as Juliet at the Vienna State Opera. Nino, who's making her American debut with us as Tatiana's sister Olga, has sung that role at both La Scala and Covent Garden. Before we play the interview, here's a brief synopsis of the opera. An impressionable country girl, Tatiana, falls in love at first sight with her new neighbor, the debonair and bored Onegin. She writes him a letter explaining her feelings, which he rejects politely but firmly. At a party, he flirts with Tatiana's sister Olga, whose fiancé is the poet Lenski, Onegin's good friend. Onegin is challenged by the jealous Lenski to a duel, in which Lenski is killed. After several years of traveling abroad, Onegin returns to St. Petersburg and sees Tatiana at a ball. She's now the wife of the much older Prince Grayman. Onegin realizes he loves Tatiana and writes her a passionate letter. When she receives him at her home, she admits that she still loves him. Rather than running away with him, however, she chooses to remain with her husband, leaving Onegin in despair. Now, on to the interview with Dina Kuznetsova and Nino Surguladze. I hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Dina Kuznetsova, who's singing the role of Tatiana in our Eugene Onegin, and with Nino Surguladze, who is making her American debut in the role of Olga. Now, we haven't done Onegin here in about 17 years, so a lot of people are going to be hearing it for the first time. So we should talk first about what our audience has to look forward to in this opera, beginning with the music, which is so breathtaking, I think. How do you feel about this score?
I'm really happy to have my debut in the United States, which was my dream, and especially of this theater. This role I love to do because I've done it already several times, and this will be the third time I will do it. And I think it's the most beautiful music, and music which remains in the ear, in the heart, because it's very melodic. It's very Russian, but also very European, and of course, one of the most famous operas of Tchaikovsky. So I think public will be not only charmed by music, but also from the staging, because it's a very interesting staging, what we are doing now.
Now, non-Russian speakers, I think, are so often sort of intimidated by singing in Russian. I mean, can you demonstrate a couple of the sounds that make it challenging to sing?
You know, before we demonstrate, I just want to say that I'm very impressed with the Russian preparation of our cast. So, like, touched and impressed, you know, because the not Russian-speaking members of the cast have really fantastic, clean, beautiful Russian,
and
it's lovely.
Which is not so.
It's not to be taken for granted at all.
Do you have a sense of what this production is going to look like? I mean, I saw it in the Met's simulcast. We should say that it is the Metropolitan Opera production, and it seemed much starker than usual and very concentrated on the characters, because there isn't that much on the stage, is there?
It's true, because for me, it will be the best thing to demonstrate what is inside of each character in this opera. And I think this is the best way, because everything is concentrated on us. So it's very good. I think it's a case to give the best, to give the 100%. And I think it's the one of the best Eugene Onegins I've ever seen.
I have to say that I saw it at the Met even before I got here into the Young Artist Program, just as it opened mm-hmm. there, and I remember really liking the staging back then, without having no notion that I would be ever.
I love that the Tatiana in her letter scene, in that little interlude before she finishes it, she's able to get out of her bedroom and run around kicking up leaves all over the place. What are the other touches, as far as your character is concerned, do you go for in the staging?
Leaves are certainly very important in this one because, well, people will see it's beautiful. There are leaves everywhere. Awesome. It looks lovely. So I think they're very, you know, they add the romanticism and kind of a touch of color and beauty to this stark production.
The Russian trees.
Otherwise, they're birch trees. And it's
now,
beautiful.
Olga and Tatiana usually have beautiful things to wear.
Yes.
I mean, there was
we've seen it today.
There's a production that was just done in Europe, I think, where Tatiana does the whole letter scene in, I think, jeans and a T-shirt sitting at a typewriter. So this is a whole different scene,
completely
I'm glad
different.
To say.
Yes,
I'm glad
yes.
to say. So what are the costumes for the two of you like?
What I haven't seen my sister's costume yet, but I'm sure coming out what I've seen mine will be beautiful.
They're beautiful period costumes, and they vary. They vary from very simple from the beginning, because truly Tatiana in the beginning is think of it as Olga, legally blonde, and Tatiana, a nerd.
Yeah, so, but inside, not outside. We will be both. I will have
right.
my hair.
I mean, as a type,
character.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, this, Dina, is the fourth leading role that you've done here in as many seasons.
Yes, I've been lucky, and I'm very grateful. Yes.
Cunning Little Vixen to Gilda and Rigoletto to Juliet to Tatiana. So this is radically different
it
vocally
is.
From anything you've done with us before. What does this require of you that the other roles didn't?
Lots of resonance. No, I'm joking. Well, I'm not joking, but, you know, I cannot say what it requires but other roles didn't, because all roles ultimately require similar things, you know, you project similar way. This one is very much middle voice and lots of kind of beautiful cantilena legato singing, and it's just beautiful. I mean, the challenge will be to carry through the orchestra and be comfortable with it, you know, not to try to compete with, because it's such a beautiful orchestration, and the orchestra in many ways underlines what the character is feeling and thinking. So not to fight with it, but rather kind of flow with it, you know.
Yeah. What's wonderful is that you have on the podium Sir Andrew Davis, who knows you so well and has conducted you before. Now, Nina, the contraltos generally play mothers and older ladies, but here you are in a role for a young contralto, and there are not many roles, at least in 19th century romantic opera,
exactly,
that you can say that about. So what kind of singing? You have this wonderful aria. I mean, what kind of singing is it?
For me, it's bel canto. And for me, it won't be a very Russian way of singing. I mean, the Russian school, there are some different Russian schools, no? But I mean, I would like to sing in Italian-Russian school. That's what I want to do. So it means everything in the place and not very profound, low register, so on. And it has to be all with the light, and it has to be... The music is so beautiful, though you don't have to even to act, because it acts for you. And this is the card of visit of Olga, absolutely, in every sense.
Now, the opera is based on verse novel by Pushkin, and so you both, I assume, read it fairly early in life.
Yes.
What sort of impression did it make on you? I mean, did you read it? Was it the kind of thing that you would read, and then a year later you would look at it again, and then you would just pick it up periodically?
Maybe, but in every age it's different. I mean, now I could look at it in different way, and of course when I read it was kind of very sad story and a little bit far from me, but now I love it more and more, and it can be very truly even today modern life, but in a different figures, you know.
Again, when we were in school we memorized big chunks of it, you know, so it's something you grew up with and then something you revisit, kind of like maybe War and Peace.
Exactly.
Very similar. It's just you're growing up, you kind of already know what it's about, and when you're little, because it's
another world. It's a grown-up's world.
But it is something that, say, a high school student would read the way we read, oh, I don't know, the Mark Twain novels or something like that.
To Kill a Mockingbird, yeah.
To Kill a Mockingbird, okay.
We were talking about today with Dina, and we were like saying that it's kind of Prejudice and Prejudice.
Yeah, Jane Austen.
Right.
Okay. Something like that.
I see.
I reread it a couple of times being grown up, and every time I remember, I'm surprised about how much I enjoy it, you know, and how much depth is in it. And, of course, the poem has much more happening than within an opera. Opera takes the plot, but the poem, it has ruminations on life, kind of semi-ironic description of manners. You know, it's really very rich description of Pushkin's time.
Absolutely. Now,
Pushkin's
Russia. Dina, you've talked before about the Tatiana way of dealing with love versus the Anna Karenina way of dealing with love that was part of your thinking, back when you were a teenager. Can you explain that to our listeners, what you meant?
Well, of course, Tatiana falls in love, tries, you know, everything when she's a girl to kind of get her man and be happy. But once it doesn't work out and she promises to be true to somebody else, she stays with it. I mean, she is a complete idealist.
Loyal.
Yeah, an idealist when she was 18 and later when she's already, you know, high society lioness, she kind of sticks to her beliefs, you know, and she behaves in a proper way, but it's not proper what society says it's proper. It's what she considers right. Yeah.
Now, what about the Anna Karenina
and
way?
Anna Karenina gives up everything for love. And
she's
ultimately
more victim of her society.
Yeah, of compassions, you know. Tatiana, though she's very passionate and in the beginning,
she can control it.
Now, I wanted to talk a bit about what these sisters think of each other. And you know, you referred to a little bit when you were saying that she thinks that Olga thinks that Tatiana's way of living is sort of, it's just not her way.
Exactly. I mean, it happens every day. It happens also, I remember we were sometimes talking on the rehearsals and remembering our families. When you have bigger sister or bigger brother and you love each other, but you have different worlds because even there is a small difference in that age, you can feel it. I mean, 4 years. So we have to think that Olga is about 13 or 14 years old. And
I really think she's that young.
Well, I heard that the Pushkin meant so. I mean, and so you are about 16 years old, so you're very big for that time. So she's kind of child, and everybody loves her, and everybody's impressed of her because she's doing this, and all that's wonderful, and everything she does is beautiful. I think Tatiana has much more things to say, but she never does because she has this own world, and I don't want to say misanthrope, but she's kind of this. And
A loner. Yeah.
Yes. So she lives in her world and nobody can come in, come out. And that's why Olga is a little bit kind of upset about that.
But do we have any sense of what Tatiana thinks of Olga?
Yes, I think it's love, but it's not a soulmate in any sort of way. You know, it's, again, as Nina said, it's completely different ways of thinking. And I think Tatiana, with her books, she doesn't necessarily have the need yet to, until Onegin comes, to
real relationship,
to try to include Olga, because there's truly nothing they can discuss. They can love each other and they can,
but we can't talk, we can't talk about anything.
We cannot talk about much, yes.
Now, Tatiana writes a declaration of love to Onegin and he rejects her. The standard way, I think, has always been to think that he's cold and callous about it, but I don't really think so, because I think he's just being honest. So, Dina, how do you look at the way he treats her?
Oh, I agree completely. I think in the given situation that Tatiana broke all of the rules, you know, of the society, he lets her down easy. I mean, I don't see him as a rake. Some people do, and I really don't. He's rather honest with her and honorable, you know. He does not take advantage of her in any way. And he tries.
Yeah.
He could, and he doesn't.
Now, Nino, in our previous conversation about Olga, you said Olga isn't as stupid as most people think she has to be. Now, why would people think of her in that way?
Not stupid, but some Olgas I've done, the directors, they were telling me, in this case, you don't know why is it happening. it's just happening that you are going to dance with him and you don't understand that he's jealous. I mean, it's not exactly for me like that. I mean, she is a woman. She's becoming a woman. So she wants to play with men. I mean, she feels that she has this power, and sometimes she does, but not because she's not a good person or something. She's just kind of woman, a little Carmen Echo. And that's what I think. Because Tatiana would never play with feelings of anybody, but maybe because she is smaller. I think she is a very good-looking woman, a girl, and she can feel that she can impress men. So she's just playing on it, and she's happy with that. She loves to do
it. Without any awareness of how her feelings are affecting other people.
Well, maybe she can, but she doesn't want to go and find
as deeply
it.
As that.
Deeply. I mean, she understands it, but she wants to be on top of it. And that's what I'm saying. She's not stupid. She knows what she's doing, but she's trying not to think about it so she doesn't feel guilty. That's what I think. Right. And not because she doesn't know what she does. I mean, I don't think so.
Dina, we should say a bit about your time here in our Young Artist Program, the Ryan Opera Center. And I'm always curious, after somebody leaves the program and they go out into the world and have the career, what aspects of the program in retrospect they think are most valuable and have served them the best over time?
Well, one of the most valuable ones, well, first of all, coaching. The coaches here are just lovely, fantastic, wonderful people, you know, and just everything, including languages and style and ability to see amazing artists in action. The half a year of the young artist life is covering or singing smaller parts, or even not so small parts right now in the season. And that is just seeing, you know, new people constantly coming and how prepared they are and how they approach their singing. It is invaluable. And right now, it wasn't when I was at the center, but right now also everybody has the great benefit of constant voice lessons, you know, and vocal supervision, which I think is a fantastic thing. So.
Now, Nina, you have a close association with La Scala, and where you began in the studio. That was your young artist program.
Yes.
So what was that like coming to that particular company, which is so legendary, at the very beginning of the career?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was, you know, at the beginning of somebody's end, you know, what I'm saying sometimes, because somebody ends their career and comes at the very end, and okay, now I'm here. I mean, it was quite feeling a little bit risky and beautiful, and also it was a life experience. And I think coming out from there, you can survive everywhere. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's a real life. It's beautiful because you can meet wonderful singers, and it's a big experience to work with big conductors. And I had a very interesting teachers, so they were like Leila Ganger, and also as in, I'm sure, here. And so it's a big experience, like stage and also life experience. So it can serve you the whole life, I think.
Since then, both of you have had so much experience in major European companies. Now, Dina, in November, you made your debut at the Vienna State Opera. What sort of experience did you have there?
Well, Vienna State Opera, it was revival. So I have to say, you get there, you have 2 days for the staging, you know, your partner comes the day before, and then you go.
You so, meet her on the stage, or you.
So yes, yeah, so with all the, you know, all the aura that there is of Vienna State Opera, of course, it was very special that way. But in terms of actually, I had no time to feel I'm at the Vienna State Opera. Seriously, there were
exactly
like 2 days of rehearsal, and my wonderful partner was Ramon Vargas, but he came there a day before, you know, and then we just showed up on the stage. So I actually, in terms of, you know, great European experiences, I want to mention I did my debut at Covent Garden singing Lauretta, and that was the full rehearsal period and just...
In a new production.
In a new production with Richard Jones directing. It was just wonderful.
Now, there is the glamorous side of the career. I mean, the applause and the wonderful roles and the beautiful opera houses that you sing in and all of that. But there's also the logistical side, the travel and the hotels and all of that. And one of our singers was telling me a few weeks ago what it's like when you're alone and you arrive in a new city and maybe it's Sunday and everything is closed and you don't know where the grocery store is and you don't know how public transportation works. I mean, can you relate to all of that?
Of course, yes.
Well, it's something, it's very common. Well, right now, when I came here, I came right from Georgia because I went to visit my parents. And I was coming from Moscow because I had a concert and I was ill. Okay, I flew for 15 hours. I came here and have a jet lag 10 hours. So for me right now, it's, I don't know, maybe it's morning or maybe not yet. Okay. But I mean, for 4 or 5 days, I was out. I swear, I'm not quite okay, but now I'm feeling better. I mean, you have to be prepared. I mean, it has, everybody says, oh, you are so lucky, you have this wonderful life. And yes, it is really wonderful and I feel lucky, but it has a lots of different sides, difficulties. Like, you have to be very often lonely, really lonely. And you have to study a lot, and okay, it's pleasure and you need to do it. Sometimes you get ill and you are alone. And well, there are lots of things. I mean, you get in a new town, a new country, you don't know anybody, but I think this is something that you have to do. I mean, you have to, or you do it, or you just leave this profession and you are stable in one theater, you don't travel. If you are wanted, then you have to do all these things.
And you have to
be ready for that.
And you have to decide whether all of these other things are worth it.
Exactly. But when you have this moment, when you do rehearsals, when you meet wonderful people, when you do and meet your audience and you see your good results, in a good case, let's do this. But, I mean, fingers crossed, you say here, then it's really it's worth of it. Everything. But it's difficult. You miss your parents, friends, fiancé. I mean, it's a monarch life in one way. I don't know what Tatiana thinks. I'm sure she's somewhere there.
Well, yes, definitely. It's a little different for me in Chicago because it really feels like home. You know, after 2 years here as a young artist and then coming back, I know everything. I know everything. It feels so good and lucky, you know.
But Chicago is different. Chicago, you feel home. When I came here, I had very good feeling from the very beginning. Even if it's very cold, it's snowing, but Chicago, it's magic because, you know, in the old Chicago, do you remember that movie? I remember it and I knew it from very, very... So Chicago is different for me. And also New York, but there are some cities that you don't really have any relationship.
No, it has a... It definitely has a difficult side. It also has a lovely side, you know? You get... Despite the fact that usually when I'm in a city, there's so little time to explore it. And then, you know, after rehearsals, you go home and you put your feet up, you know, and you kind of like watch TV, have your TV dinner. Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, to explore Vienna and explore London and explore Milan, you know, it's lovely. It can be lovely. It's everything. It can be lovely. It can be horrid.
Sometimes it depends how you feel that day or that.
Dina, you have a little boy whose name is Timothy.
Yep.
It's a little too soon, to say the least, for him to see Onegin, but has he heard an entire opera in a live performance yet?
No. He's very, very active little guy. He's 3 and a half. So I don't think he would be able to sit through it. Yeah, the maximum I took him in New York, I took him to a bubble show. It was an hour and he made it. So I was very proud. But no, opera no. He hears me warming up. He even sometimes warms up with me. Yeah. We have this game that I'm trying to find my resonance and I start meowing like a cat and he meows with me. So that's very sweet.
So any final words to encourage our audience to come and experience Eugene Onegin?
Beautiful music, beautiful production, very romantic. Come.
Welcome, and I hope you will like it, and we will try our best.
That's true.
Thank you, Dina Kuznetsova and Nino Sugulatze.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features interviews with the creative forces behind the productions in the 2007-2008 season. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.